scores! Gilmore scores! The final three left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, here we go. Another week begins. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It is Monday, April 1st. Welcome to April. It's 4 o'clock local time as we're talking, so all April Fool's jokes are null and void, and you will get this is an April Fool's free zone for the next hour on Flames Talk. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. No fooling. Look who's back after a week. R&Ring. We've got Wes Gilbertson of Post Media with us. What's going on, Wes?
How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. Good to have you back.
Good to be back.
I know that you were in the house on Saturday night for Calgary's 4-2 win over Los Angeles, and I know the games don't mean a lot or anything for the playoff chase right now. We all know that, but you sure got the feeling that that win still meant something inside that room. I was actually, I don't want to say taken aback, I just was very struck by everybody. We spoke to Blake Coleman live on the postgame show, hearing from Rasmus Anderson, hearing from Nazem Kadri, hearing from Ryan Huska, who went almost 10 minutes on his postgame news conference. You could just tell that that win meant a lot, because we all on the outside know where they sit, and inside that room, they know just as well how things sit right now, but you really got the feeling at morning skate on Saturday that they were very determined to snap that skid and not let this get longer than five, and they wanted to beat a divisional opponent. They truly wanted to go out there with five home games to go at the time to go out there and put a really good effort on the ice. And now I know a lot of people are tired of hearing you and me and others talk about the culture and talk about, you know, playing for next season and setting a standard. And lots of people ridicule me about that on Twitter and on the text line, or when they see me out and about, like, hey, how about more stuff about the culture? It's like, I get it. I know that that's you don't want to hear
this
about
that.
That's
why I don't get it. That's why I don't go out and about.
That's good.
I can't risk it.
Stay off social media, too. That's also a good idea. But honestly, Wes, that's something that they are taking very seriously inside the room right now, is not letting this be a negative finish to the season in terms of their process and how they go about their business and the vibe, and I'm going to use the C word again, that the culture inside the locker room. Like, I'm telling you, you talk to a Jacob Markstrom or a Blake Coleman or a Rasmus Anderson or a Mackenzie Weegar or Nazem Kadri or a Michael Backlund. Like, you talk to the leaders on this team, that's something they are very adamant about, as they know they're not going to the playoffs. They know that they're playing out the string, but they want to make sure that they're not just collecting a paycheck as they play out the string here.
And I hope for those listening that that's exactly what you want to see and really what you expect to see. You know, I think when you start to get some sort of deep-seated issues within an organization, it's when it becomes acceptable to, I suppose, mail it in a little. You know, what you expect is to see them treat these otherwise meaningless games as if they're meaningful. And I thought Saturday was a great example of it. Not only had they lost five in a row, not only were they up against a division rival, like it wasn't just coming out of the slump and beating a team that you want to be competitive with for years to come, but it was just the way they played, the way they were throwing themselves in front of pucks, the way they were forechecking. You know, you see Nazem Kadri run over Mikey Anderson in front of the home bench. Like, all these guys and all these moments that you could have made another decision, turned away from a hit or given a bit of a flamingo on a potential blocked shot, good on them. And quite frankly, it's what they've been talking about, but it's what should be expected.
Yep.
Because I'd be really concerned if we were sitting here talking about a team that looked like they couldn't wait to get to the 60-minute mark on Saturday.
I want to. We're going to hear from Rasmus Anderson in just a second, because he was quite insightful on Saturday night following the win. But just a couple of observations from that game, because I think it is one thing to stand in front of us on a morning skate or a practice and say, yeah, you know what, we got to set the standard and all. It's one thing to say that, because that's what a lot of teams are saying right now who are in similar situations to Calgary. But it's another thing to actually go and do it and put your money where your mouth is. And the fact that the Flames seem to be, and the leaders on this team who are going to be the leaders going forward, they seem to be really invested in doing just that. I think as a fan, that's something that, look, you don't like the fact that your team is where they are necessarily. You know, you don't like the fact that they're playing out the string. The fact that there are no stakes in so many of these games down the stretch is not where most fans want their team to be. But the fact that that is one of the things that you're hearing, I think, is important. And there's only so much that can do. You're still sometimes, a lot of times, going to lose games to more talented teams. But I think that's something you want to see, and something you want to see developed. And so I give, like, the first guy that I think of is Kadri, because I know that this is killing Kadri. He hates this. He has no interest in being part of a team that isn't going to the playoffs. And I think it would be really easy for a guy like Nazem to check out. And I honestly believe that we're talking about a guy who's overcompensating in a good way.
Yeah.
Like I when he scored that first goal to make it 1-0, 8 seconds into that power play, it was kind of like it was so quick, bang, 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 that a lot of people in the rink didn't even know it was in. And the team was celebrating. They scored a goal, but you know, it felt like Kadri went out of his way to be like, hey, we're fired up about this goal. This is a good start. We just scored in the power play. And then you mentioned the hit that he lays on Mikey Anderson like that. I get the feeling that Nazem Kadri is going out of his way to pump himself up, because he knows that's going to set the tone for his team, and he knows what that's going to mean for the team going forward. That's just one of the observations I've had in terms of a group of players putting their money where their mouth is in that respect.
Well, and this was Nazem Kadri's first period the other night, right? He eats a high stick to send his team to the power play. He scores the power play goal a few seconds later. He helps force a turnover and then makes a great spin move away from a check to get an assist on Martin Pospisil's goal. He runs over Mikey Anderson right in front of the benches. A hit that, you know, was probably borderline late, and I say that as a way of pointing out that he could have easily swung away from that. He's sending a message to his own team that, hey, that, you know, we're here to fight tooth and nail for this game. Rings one off the crossbar later. It's a shame he doesn't get an assist on Mackenzie Weegar's goal, because he wins the faceoff to start that power play sequence. And, you know, what struck me was I asked him afterwards, I said to him, you had this great start and kind of put it the way you just did. You could be one of those guys. You've won a cup. You could be one of those guys who might sort of have trouble getting up for a game like this. So why were you so fired up? And he said, listen, we talked about how we've lost five in a row and we needed to get off to a good start, and I wanted to lead by example there. And that's exactly what he did. And I love the way you make the point that here's the guys that you kind of wouldn't blame for checking out, right? Blake Coleman's won two Stanley Cups. If that guy checked out at the end of a season, you'd kind of say, yeah, I get it, right? Mackenzie Weegar's already, and you could say this about Blake Coleman, Mackenzie Weegar's already shattered every personal career high you could think of, right? If that guy started to check out, he's also blocked a gazillion shots. If that guy started to check out towards the end of the season, you'd say, yeah, you know what? I kind of get it.
Yep.
Same with Kadri. Same with Rasmus Anderson. He told me a couple months ago that he was worried his left foot was broken on a play earlier this season. Well, it's got like a magnet in it, right? He takes that shot on Saturday. He can't get up, and he comes out for the third, and one of the first things he does is kneel in front of that Pierre-Luc Dubois opportunity to block another one. And these are the guys, and this has to give you hope for the future, because that sort of tone setting, those veterans are going to be the guys who ultimately decide whether a retool takes 5 years or takes two. Yeah, Craig Conroy's got a lot to do with it. He's got to go find some talent, right? Ryan Husk has got a ton to do with it. But if you're veterans, and I think of some of the teams we've seen down the stretch, not necessarily Flames teams, but opponent teams in the, you know, tail end of a season. Like, remember that Sharks team at the end of last season? They couldn't have cared less.
Yep.
Well, of course they're awful this year. And I'm not saying that the Flames are going to be a juggernaut next year because they're trying hard in the final month of the season, but I do believe that that standard matters.
Yeah.
And those guys that are upholding it, that matters. The fact that those guys are saying, yeah, Connor Terry, we know you're fighting for a job. Yeah, of course you have tons to play for. Nazem Kadri really doesn't have much to play for right now, and that's the way he's playing, and that's such a good sign.
I think Rasmus is another really good example because, again, that's an example of a guy who is talking about it, and then he's going in and making sure that he's executing and living that. And because you're right. I mean, he ate a bunch of shots.
Right.
He was engaged. I thought that was one of the best games he's played in the last little while. And I thought that was really, really neat to see. And, you know, I felt bad for him because when he ate that shot, it led to a goal. It led to the Kopitar power play
right.
goal. And there's nothing else he could do. He did his damnedest to try and stay on the play. But, you know, sometimes the body just says no after you eat a shot to the top of the foot, bottom of the ankle like that.
It's a really heads-up play by Kempe to get the puck back to his side of the ice there, too.
Like they saw it. They're like, oh, this guy's hurt.
Yeah.
It kind of was tit for tat because Lizotte had the same thing happen to him
right.
on the Coleman goal game winner. Same thing. He was out of the play because he had just eaten a shot and couldn't stay in the play. And then Coleman scores what had turned out to be the game winner on the 3-1 goal. Anyway, somehow Raz still came out and spoke to the media, did maybe the longest post-game player scrum of the season. I just want to play you a little bit of it because I thought he gave some great insight as to what's important inside the room and what they are really driving home inside the room as they play out the string here, what the message is to some of these younger players who are going to be with them down the stretch. Just want to play a little bit of Rasmus Andersson from Saturday following a 4-2 win over the LA Kings and what's important for him and the Flames going forward.
You got to pay the price night in, night out, and you know, NHL is a lot about, you know, knowing your role and thriving with your role. And if you have a shelter role, it's, you know, if you get an opportunity to take advantage of it. And that's what I think, our young players have done this year. You know, I think Posse is, he's a pest out there.
Oh, sorry.
Night in and night out. And, you know, it's him understanding his role. And I think Matty has been excellent since he got back, and I think Saris has been good all year, and so, you know, the opportunity is there, and you got to take it when you get it, and I think our young guys have done a really good job with that.
Rez, we always ask that sort of question, what can young guys learn from this? And it wasn't very long ago that you were breaking into this league. Like, is tonight
the night? 6 years ago was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been around longer than that. is tonight a night that means something in the development of players?
It's hard to say. I think the thing with, you know, young players and myself included when I was young is you don't realize how much or how many games it actually is. And, you know, there isn't a lot of practices, and especially this time of the year, it's everything is about the games and or you travel or, you know, playing in Canada on the west side, it's a lot of travel, and you know, it's almost a slap in the face your first year because you don't realize how you know how much it takes on your body and mentally, you know, getting home at 2 a.m. have a day off the next day and then play, and then, you know, then you might leave again, and so it's, you learn a lot, and you learn how to deal with it, and the longer your NHL career goes, and you know, it can be tough. You know, it's doesn't really matter what age you are, but you know, you learn how to deal with it. The older you get, and you more experience you have, because you know the first few years are tough, and you know, then eventually when you get a family and a wife and kids and all that kind of stuff, it sucks to be without them, right? And you know, you're gone for a large period of times during most of the year, and So it's a learning curve, but once again, I thought I thought our young players have been excellent all year, and they've been really taking advantage of their opportunity, and they should be proud of themselves.
When you were a young player and you were going through what you're just describing, at what point did you feel you were getting a handle of that adjustment?
You know, the one thing too, when it's your first year, everything is exciting, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, if you look around the league, a lot of young players, it's the second year that can be challenging for a lot of players, and because I think that's when, you know, you realize that, you know, you get paid a lot of money to do this, and it's not all sunshine and rainbows, even though it is. Don't get me wrong, it really is. You know, we all love our job, and we all love playing in the NHL, and we all love playing for the Flames. But you know, it's a mental grind, and it's a physical grind, a lot of nights, and it can be challenging. It really can be, and you know, you have ups and downs, and you know, with the social media world, you know, you read how terrible you are one game and how good you are the next, and so it's really, you got to learn how to cope with everything around it. And but once again, you know, the one I'm really impressed with is Matty. You know, since he been back up, I think he's playing with a lot of confidence and a lot of swagger, and you know, he's hanging on the pucks, he's making plays, and you know, he's going to be a really good player in this organization for a long time.
So what's your advice then to these young players that are coming up that are experiencing things that not too long ago you were experiencing?
Yeah, you know, honestly, not much the first year, right? It's, as I said, you know, the first year is exciting and new, and you're kind of, you know, you're just riding along, kind of, and you know, you see all the, you know, you see New York, you see Florida, like you see the big cities, and you stay at nice hotels, you fly private and stuff like that. So I think the first year, you know, you're just enjoying it, and then, as I said, the second year can be challenging sometimes. And but so far, you know, they've done a great job. All three, four, five—I don't know how many there's been—but they've done a good job, all of them, and. You know, just stay in the moment, stay present, and enjoy it. And you know, if they come up to us next year, and or you know, we see them struggling, or if they take the next step, you know, you're gonna be by their side, and that's why, you know, you love playing on a team. You're in it together, and you know, some nights you can be the hero, and some nights you're the villain, and that's just the way it is. And so, you know, you always have your teammates back, and I think that's the one thing I love about our team too. It doesn't matter who you are, you know, we all try to get in the lane and blocking shots and standing up for each other, and you know, we all know what situation we are in. It's gonna take a miracle to get in the playoffs, but we still show up on a night like tonight, and you know, we block shots, we hit, we play a physical game, we're all over a really good team for 60 minutes, and yeah, it's it was one of those nights when you look around and, you know, you're proud of being this team.
That was Rasmus Andersson on
good
Saturday
stuff,
night.
Eh?
It was really interesting stuff, and I thought some real leader-like stuff. It's funny, a text came in as that was going on, and says Andersson coming off the ice and throwing his stick down the tunnel a couple games ago shows no leadership and sets a terrible example for young players, not convinced he's what the Flames need for the retool. And while I don't necessarily agree with that take, mm-hmm. I don't mind guys showing frustration. I really don't. I think that we live in such a watered down media world that when you see actual emotion from these dudes, it's why I was never going to criticize Tkachuk during that COVID year where he lost his mind following that loss to the Maple Leafs, like six games in or whatever it was. Like, when guys are showing real emotion, I'm not going to sit here and criticize him for it. That's what we want to see, and it's part of what goes into it. So
especially in a profession where that emotional engagement, like we're not talking about your boss at the office flipping a table in the lunchroom.
Yeah,
you know, like losing your cool within the ice surface or on the way to the locker room is not out of place in hockey.
Nor do I think it is a show personally of poor leadership.
No.
I really don't. I think that you want to know if you're Connor Zeri or if you're Martin Pospisil or if you're Matt Coronato, you want to know that one of the guys who's going to wear a letter next year cares that much. And I honestly don't think that was fabricated. That wasn't Rasmus just being I'm gonna fake this because I got no. I think he was actually upset.
Yeah, no, I got no problem with that, and I really do think, and I sort of think back actually as we're having this conversation to my chat with Chris Tanev the day after he was traded to the Dallas Stars. There's a guy who is well regarded, obviously, for his leadership, and he went out of his way to say Raz has really taken a step as a leader. And I think if Chris Tanev is talking about that, for those of us who aren't inside the locker room to try to guess what kind of leader he is based on a stick slam or whatever, and listen, that's our job, and any fan can analyze that however they want. But if Chris Tanev says that Rasmus Anderson is one of the voices that has become most respected in the Flames locker room,
yep,
I'll take his word for it.
Well, and you weren't here last week, but one of the things I'm curious, because I really think Rasmus as a leader, as a player, is one of the driving forces here going forward in terms of the remaining players. And you know, one of my points last week was I think there is a real argument to be made that, you know, you can go to Rasmus Anderson the same way and see if you can get him to buy in the same way that Mark Giordano did right around the same time in their careers when the team was entering a rebuild. And Mark Giordano was the last man standing with Phaneuf, Bouwmeester, Regier all gone. Giordano was the last man standing, and they named him captain, and they went to him and said, hey, like, you're the guy. And yeah, I'm sure Gio would have much rather in 2013 and 2014 in those years been on a team that looked like they were going to be fighting for Stanley Cups, but he said, no, we're going through a retool. I'm going to be a part of this going forward, so I'm going to embrace this and really take it on. And I think that they've got because Raz has got 2 years left on his contract. I know that his year this year is not as strong as what a lot of people were hoping, but I think he's just having a down year based on his capabilities.
I think that's where some of the frustration comes from.
And I honestly think he knows that he's said it multiple times that he's not where he wants to be. But I think you can honestly go to him and empower him and say, hey, man, you're part of this, and we want you to embrace this. We want to sign you again. We want you to be a part of it. And I think a guy like that, who I think does care a lot and is one of those guys who hates losing in such a fashion that that's a good thing, I think you can really go to him and say, hey, we want you to be one of the driving forces going forward. And I think that brings out even more in the player going forward.
Well, and I think there is a... I was going to say debate, and I don't think that's the right word. I do think fans are curious about Rasmus Anderson's interest in being part of a retool. And I think that comes from the fact that Raz has that sort of edgy personality. He almost takes a little bit of pride in coming across as sort of cantankerous sometimes.
Smarmy.
He just, you know, he's not going to hide those frustrations that we're talking about. And so I think it's easy for some people to maybe make the leap sometimes that, oh, geez, he doesn't look like he necessarily wants to be a part of a rebuild. And, you know, one of the things I thought was so fascinating about his comments Saturday when he said, you know, this is one of those nights you're proud to be a part of this team. I think as long as Rasmus Anderson sees this thing going in the right direction, as long as he's ultimately going to be paid what he thinks he's worth.
Yeah,
I do expect him to be a guy who is very much a core piece.
Yeah,
if not the core piece. Like, that's how important I think Rasmus Anderson is. I think we're talking about probably the next captain of the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, I could honestly really see that, and I also believe that he still look. I don't think people like me or you or others on the outside were completely out to lunch when we were talking about him being kind of that, like, cresting into being one of the top 15, 20 defensemen in the NHL coming into the season. Now, I know that it hasn't gone the way that he wanted, team wanted. Like, I know that he is, it's been a frustrating individual season for him. And again, he'll be the first to tell you that, but they happen. And that doesn't mean that is who he is, or that he was sheltered, or like, I think that this is going to be a real learning year for him. I think he's going to reset, and I think that he's going to come back with a completely different mindset for next year. And I'm feeling really I don't know, confident, optimistic, encouraged that he's going to come back and look like a much higher level version of himself when they're back next season.
That wallop of a weekend they had in Florida and Carolina shortly after the trade deadline sort of, I guess, highlighted how being a workhorse defenseman on a retooling team, like, that's one of the hardest positions there is. And you know, I remember sitting there watching those two games, and I think Anderson and Uyghur must have been like in the minus three, four range in both of them.
I think they were minus 10 combined in those two games.
Yeah, okay. And so, like, they were really taking it on the chin, and yet they had to play 27 or 28 minutes. Like, there's no shelter when you don't have any depth on your blue line right now. And, you know, the Calgary Flames, as we all know, have more guys who are probably third pairing guys, certainly, than they do who are top four guys at this point. And so, you know, that reminded me, I guess, there's some really tough nights as either the goaltender or a workhorse defenseman during a retool, because you can't hide from it. You know, in that great clip you played, Raz is talking about sheltered.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a sheltered role, guess who has the least sheltered role on the Calgary Flames? Rasmus Anderson.
Yep.
And the fact that he hasn't been able to cement himself as I know he's wanted to as the power play quarterback, I think that bothers him. Those nights when he's playing a ton of minutes and it's ending up in the back of his net too often, I think that bothers him. I haven't had this conversation with him, but I know if he was sitting here listening, he'd say, yeah, guys, this hasn't been the season that I want. But I still believe he has that,
as do I,
potential. In fact, I'll be surprised if this season, when we look back, isn't the anomaly. And that's not me saying he's been horrible. He just hasn't probably taken that one next step that I thought he was going to.
I still think that step is there. I'm looking for it next year. I still think he's got it in him to be, if he's not a one, then he's close to like an NHL one, like Haskin and Makar, that level, maybe not. But I think, as I said, 15 to 20 in the league, I absolutely think that's there for him. I want to read you a few more texts before we hit Blake Coleman to close out this part of the conversation and before we hit the round table. By the way, that guy who texted, the person who texted in, responded back, said, point taken, guys. I just believe he has a lot more to offer and would rather see him channel that frustration in different ways on the ice for himself and the young guys. Great conversation. Appreciate it.
Just let me jump in on that really quick. Like, if you text in, and trust me, we are so grateful for everyone who listens to us babble on about the Flames. If you text in and we're throwing that around, please never take it.
No,
as
don't
us
ever take
ridiculing
it
you. It's great conversation.
We
fodder.
use it as something to jump off.
So please keep it coming,
even if we disagree. This says players and coaches should worry about the culture. Absolutely. As a fan, that's what I want. As a fan, I also want a high draft pick as possible, as high a draft pick as possible, to give the team the best chance of hitting a home run. Am I being irrational? Absolutely. And that's why I'm watching the games instead of playing or managing. I want my cake and eat it too. Dang it. Go Flames. That's from Dan in Cochrane. And this from Randy in Cochrane. Jeez, the home of Wes Gilbertson, well represented.
Can we call it almost Hockeyville?
I was quite upset that they didn't get Hockeyville. Those who say that they shouldn't play out the string, which I agree with, shouldn't then talk about certain players getting points in meaningless games, which is going to happen. That's from Randy in Cochrane. Here's Blake Coleman, who spoke on Monday morning at Winsport after Flames practice on the same topic, just about things going forward, setting a standard, and how he can be a part of that standard going forward.
You want to instill the right culture, the right attitude. I think we've got some guys that have won here, and we've got guys that have been in the league a long time that I think they can learn from. But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, it's about them. You know, the more games you play, the more time you spend in this league, the more comfortable you get. And I know for myself, it took me time to really understand and learn the game, and I'm still learning and still trying to grow. While I'm playing, so it's one of those things that the more experience you can get under your belt, the more confident you are, and the better the team ends up becoming.
For a guy like you, where does the growth come from in terms of learning or experiences? I mean, you've done quite a bit in this league, so where do you find that?
Well, it's a new challenge. You know, I haven't been in this position in a while. Obviously, you know, our reality is what it is right now, but, you know, it can challenge you, and when you're, you know, in this spot to be a better person, leader, teammate, you know, you still got to show up and leave it out there and you know, on me and the rest of the guys that have been around for a little bit. It's more just about showing the culture that we expect and from ourselves and from the young guys. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you don't want to have a losing attitude. And I think guys have done a good job of trying to keep that out of our room.
You had some tough times early on in your career. Was there somebody that maybe in a similar role that you are in now that kind of maybe left an impression, you know, as far as how to conduct yourself when times are tough? Was there a veteran who did that for you?
Yeah, I had a pretty good amount of both examples. It's tough, and I understand it now a lot better, obviously, being on the other side of it. When you're young, you just show up and happy to be there, and you work hard. And not to say that you're not happy now, but it's just a different reality. And I was lucky to have Travis Zajac as a teammate in New Jersey, and he was in a similar spot in the sense that, you know, he'd been to a cup final, he'd had success. I think he's about my age, honestly, when I was coming in the league, and we had those tough years, and he was just the ultimate pro. He showed up, he worked hard, I never heard him complain once. There's a lot of things that I admired about him, and, you know, probably didn't tell him enough how much I did, but it left a pretty lasting impression on me, and you know, that's what you can hope to do for younger guys.
I know it has been the easiest year for this group, but do you feel like you've made progress establishing a team culture here?
Yeah, I think the culture is great. You know, we've gotten great coaching. We've got a really good group of guys. It's fun to come to the rink still. You know, I've been on teams where it's not fun. You know, you lose five in a row, and it's not exactly not that anybody's happy about losing, but I think we're understanding it's more about the way we play right now, and the results will follow. Like, I thought the St. Louis game was really good, and just, you know, bounces didn't go our way, but we carried that over to another strong game against LA, and I think a lot of it's on the staff. They've done a good job of keeping it light and keeping it more about teaching and developing and growing our game versus just getting, you know, beat up on mistakes and the results.
There you go. Blake Coleman at practice on Monday, and no surprise that Blake is really taking this on and taking the leadership role on down the string here in a big way, too. That's maybe the least surprising thing that we've seen this season.
One of the stats I was looking at on Blake Coleman today, and yes, to answer your question, Blake Coleman is sort of become the heart and soul guy in that locker room. Like, he has a bigger leadership role than I think any of us know, and we know he has a big one.
Yep.
You know, the interesting stat I dug up today on Blake Coleman, that was his sixth game winner on Saturday against the Kings. And you know, we talk so much about the empty netters, and I know he gets a hard time. He scored the winner in almost 18% of the Flames' victories this season.
Yep. Sounds about right to me.
Isn't that wild?
The amount of times that I've said, oh, game-winning goal, Blake Coleman.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What a great season he's had.
It's Steinberg and West along with you this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio, your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Monday. It's brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. Steinberg, Wes Gilbert to the Post Media, and on the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills joins us to complete our Monday roundtable. Gents, it has now been, and it's actually hard to wrap my head around the fact it's been this many games, but 24 games since the All-Star break, which means 24 games since the Flames made the move of putting Yegor Sharangovich down the middle. Obviously, that coincided with the Elias Lindholm trade. The Flames have been without Lindholm since the All-Star break, and Sharangovich has been playing down the middle since the All-Star break. So 24 games. guys, now that we have seen more than a quarter of a season of Yegor playing center ice, what's your feel? Is this something you think should be a long-term thing? Is this something you'd like to see continue into next season?
Well, it's a tough question to answer, Pat. I think he's in the right spot right now because the Flames were left without a number one centerman when they traded Elias Lindholm to the Canucks and needed someone to fill that spot. And I guess you could argue that Nazem Kadri is their number one centerman, but Yegor Sharangovich has been playing for the most part in the spot vacated by Elias Lindholm, and that's on a line with Jonathan Huberdeau on the left and some different guys on the right. But you know, I would say at this stage, is probably more dangerous offensively playing on the wing than he is at center, but there was going to be a learning curve for him moving from right wing to center, the additional defensive responsibilities, some heavier lifting. And I do think that his play has fallen off a little bit in the last handful of games. But prior to that, it looked like he had finally adjusted and become more comfortable, more confident playing up the middle, and was starting to get those same looks that he was getting on the wing, finding some soft spots and using that wicked shot of his. The last few games, I haven't seen as much of that, but small sample size. So right now, I do think that he's a guy who has the versatility to play at center or on the wing. Long term, if the Flames can find a centerman who can play Elias Lindholm's old minutes, then I think it would be worth potentially moving Yegor Sharangovich back to right wing. But I also think that the more games he plays up the middle, the more comfortable he's going to get in that spot. And as we've seen with this 24-game sample size, chances are he's going to start to figure things out offensively again and continue to do some heavy lifting defensively. So it's a tough question for me to answer. For me, it's not black or white. It's more gray. I think he's good at center. I think he's probably a little bit better offensively on the wing, but I also think that centermen are more valuable. So I guess it depends which way you want to go with it.
Yeah, I really liked this question when it popped up today. And, you know, so much so I was kind of wondering who came up with it. If we maybe...
I stole it from
somebody else.
If we
maybe outsourced today or what was happening. I'm with you, Wilsey, in that I think he's filled in admirably as center. And yet I think he's best suited to be a winger. And I think if we're talking about a Flames team that is back to being competitive, that it, you know, not that they're not competitive, but is back to competing for a playoff spot, is back to being in that mix, he's a guy who's probably playing the wing for a team of that stature. And the faceoff percentage for me is just too low. I know he's been working at it, but, you know, since becoming a center, he's just a smidge under 41%.
Yep.
That probably just doesn't cut it. And while I think he's done a good job of it, I do think they miss him as a winger. And I don't think I'd say the same when he was moved away from center. I don't think I'd say, geez, they really miss Yegor Sharangovich up the middle of the ice. I think they miss him on the wing.
I've seen enough in my eyes to know or to think that they would be better off signing somebody in free agency, Sean Monahan or somebody like that. I'm all in on the Sean Monahan back to Calgary train. I've decided that is one of my, I have no idea if it's realistic. I just would love that.
It'd be a great story.
But I'm all, because I don't think there's any doubt.
Do you have a hashtag for that yet?
Not yet. I'll come up with something.
Okay.
Hashtag Sean, sign Sean.
Yeah, sign Sean. Monahan. I like that. Yeah, I like that.
Sign Sean.
To me, there's no doubt that Sharangovich is this team's number three center. Like, in terms of ice time, responsibility, usage, like, it's Kadri and Backlund, and then it's Yegor. And that's not a bad thing. We're talking about a guy who's playing center ice for the first time in years and on a regular basis and is being asked to fill a void left by one of the best two-way centers in the league in Elias. So that's not a criticism of Yegor, but he is being used very clearly as this team's 3C. And I think he is better suited as a top six winger all day, every day, because of the things that you just talked about, Wilsey, like the way he uses his shot, how dangerous he is, his speed, those things, it's not like they don't translate at center, but all of the other things that go into playing center ice, I think, is taking away from how effective and how impactful Yegor can be. And the results at center have been, and I hate saying this because I'm such a big fan of the player, but they've been very mediocre for a guy how he's been used. He's just barely treading water on the 5-on-5 possession scale. He's just a smidge above 52%, and that's coming with almost a 79% offensive zone start ratio. Nobody since Elias has left has had a higher zone start ratio than Sharon Govich has. Almost 80%, guys, and he's just barely treading water in the possession side of things. Goals for, goals against are even at 15-15, just barely above the Mendoza line or the even line when it comes to high danger scoring chances. It just, if you're getting 80% of your starts in the offensive zone compared to your own zone, you need to be doing more than that to convince me that this is the position that you should be going forward. Whereas when he's playing the wing, he is impactful. He helps this team generate offense. He is a legitimate threat to score from anywhere because of how elite his shot is. And so I'd rather see that. He has done an admirable job, and he was asked to fill in a tough spot. But you've got Kadri, who's having a hell of a year and doesn't look like he's slowing down. And you've got Backlund, who takes on the shutdown minutes in his sleep. You don't need Sharon Govich as your three center. You need him as your one or two right wing. And you can go and sign somebody else to play those number three center ice, or that number three center ice role. So that sounds maybe unnecessarily harsh on Yegor. It's not meant to be. It's more just, I think he's a hell of a player. I think he really helps this team. I just don't think long-term he helps the team anywhere near as much as their third center compared to him being on the wing. And, you know, you've also got the whole idea of Zeri down the middle, which is something that's interesting. And they need to go out and probably both acquire and draft some center icemen that can truly be part of this going forward. Because, look, Kadri's 33, Backs just turned 35, and that's very young compared to Pat, Wes, and Derek, but it's you know, hockey-wise, they're more towards the end of their career. They're both closing in on 1,000 NHL games, whereas, you know, they need guys who are in their young or early to mid-20s at center ice going forward. And so, you know, I think about Yegor. I think he's done an admirable job. I just think for the time being and going into next season, playing on the wing is where I think he needs to be.
Yeah, and see, I'm not convinced of that. To your point, Pat, Michael Backlund's 35. At some point in time, you're going to have to replace him. He's got 2 years left on his contract after this season, so it's not something that's imminent, but say 3 years from now. And Nazem Kadri is 33, but still has 5 years left in his contract after this season. So you shouldn't have to worry about replacing him for a while. But Yegor Sharangovich, to me, the only big issue I have with him at center is his faceoff percentage.
Not the numbers I just threw out at you?
Well, here's a number I'll throw it at you. Sharangovich has more points per game at center than he does on wing. Or I should say he has more points per game, 0.75. Since moving full-time to center in a top-nine role than he had prior to the All-Star break and prior to the Elias Lindholm trade. He had 0.71 points per
now,
game.
Is that fair, knowing how the first month of the season went for him?
I was just about to go okay. There. I was just about to say there was a time at the start of the season when he looked a little bit lost, trying to figure out who he was as a player, where he fit on this team. So for sure, I wouldn't throw that first month out or first 2 months out, but there was definitely a learning curve for him. And it definitely took him some time to get comfortable and figure out what his role with his team was going to be. And his role changed. You know, he started as the first line right winger, and then he was the fourth line centerman for a while. So he was kind of bouncing around trying to find himself. But I actually like him up the middle in the sense that I think he's good away from the puck. He's good defensively. He's got to work on that faceoff percentage. There's no doubt about that. And offensively, I think he's done a pretty good job moving from right wing to center, where, again, you've got more defensive responsibilities, and you know it's not just about finding soft spots so you can fire the puck in the offensive zone. So for a guy who's 25 years old, you could argue that Sharon Govich is a better centerman at 25 than Backlund was, or that Kadri was. I'm not saying that I would,
I just can't go there.
But
Wills, I got to jump in, and I'm not trying. I don't want to get heated on it, but like when you're an 80% zone start guy and you're just barely treading water on the possession side of it, I can't sit here and say that he's been good defensively. It's been a real struggle for him.
Also keep in mind who he's been playing with. You don't think that has something to do with his numbers defensively?
I guess he's
the best 200-foot player on that line.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm so on board when he's playing down the middle. And I feel bad because I feel like I'm really being harsh on him. I just am really trying to make the point that I just think center ice is not the spot for him. And the wing is where he really helps this team most. And we can agree to disagree on it. Clearly, it's tough for me to sit here and say, I know that he has had some line mates that have not been super strong defensively. I'm with you 100%, but he's still playing. Like, he's not playing tough competition and he's getting sheltered minutes, and it's still been a struggle. So I don't know. I digress. And you know what, Wilsey? He is really good defensively, and he's got a good high hockey IQ when he's playing on the wing. So to your point, maybe it does end up turning the corner for him if they stick with it.
Yeah, and I mean, the two wingers he's played most often with since moving to center are Jonathan Huberdeau, and hey, he's playing a lot better without the puck and a lot better defensively now than he was, but he's still not great. And Andrei Kuzmenko. Guys, he has been up and down like a yo-yo. Offensively, he dazzles us from time to time. He certainly has on occasion in the last couple of games. But away from the puck and in the defensive zone, there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. So I would argue that Yegor Sharangovich has had some heavy lifting to do in the sense that he's had a couple of wingers who are not great without the puck and not great defensively. So he's had to take on a lot of that responsibility. I just look at him as a 25-year-old player in his first season on a new team who's bounced around and played on different lines and played with different players, but he's still found a way to be effective, especially since the first month or two of the season. And yeah, right now, is he better on right wing than he is at center? I would say yes, but he's 25. I still think he's got room to grow and develop and become better up the middle than he's been. And I think he's been just fine. And I think he's been good at times. So I guess we'll have to agree to disagree. But I'm just not convinced that he's more valuable to this team down the road playing on right wing than he is at center. Because at 25, I still think he's going to get better. And I think he's been good for the most part.
Guys, can I just debut the lines I scribbled down as I was listening to this conversation inspired me? We know Andrew Mangiapane is not likely to play tomorrow. Ryan Huska told us as much. What about, just even for one night, leave Pospisil, Kadri, Kuzmenko together. It's looked pretty good. What about Huberdeau with Zeri at center and Coronado on the wing, and put Yegor Sharangovich with Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund for a night? Anybody?
I mean, I'm up for anything at this point in time.
As am I.
Why not? Although the lines the last couple of games have looked pretty good. So I'm not sure how much tinkering I would want to do right now. And, you know, it's funny because we're having this conversation about Yegor Sharangovich, and we've got, you know, somewhere between 24 and 30 games of a sample size of him at center. We've seen Connor Zeri at center for what, two periods?
Mm-hmm.
And I know everybody is excited to see him play up the middle again, but we've got way more of a book on Sharangovich at center than we do on Zeri. And I guess maybe that's the point, is that we want to get a look at Zeri playing center to see if potentially he's a fit there for them long term.
Yeah, I mean, when you're unfortunately tumbled out of the playoff race, that this is the time to experiment, right? Because you go into next year now knowing it, and not so much into next year, but into your summer conversations. You know, they're having the same conversations, obviously, in hockey ops of where do we like Sharangovich best? You know, as we build the optimal lineup for next season, is he center or wing? You probably have that answer by now. I'm sure they'll be fascinated to get just a glimpse of Connor's area at center down the stretch to see how it looks.
And guys, if they were to go sign, say, Sean Monahan, great, move Yegor Sharangovich back to the wing, because now you've got your number one and two and number three centermen. You've got your centerman for your top nine. You can put him back in the wing. But if they don't go sign a centerman who's going to play in their top nine, for me, he's still their best option right now. So I guess it depends on what happens between now and the start of next season.
Do you really want to be reminded every night that you traded Sean Monahan with a first-round pick? Do they want a 60-minute times 82 reminder of that? I don't know, guys.
I don't know with it. I get it. But that was, it wasn't Conroy who made that call. It was the prior regime who made that decision.
You know what, though? Hey, sign him as a free agent and then trade him for a first-round pick before the deadline next year.
Seemed to work for Montreal, hey?
Right?
Worked out just...
Sean Monahan, the first-round pick factory.
It doesn't have to be Monahan. I just love that idea because it would be... Look, I mean, right now we're looking for positive story. That would be a super positive story. But you know what, Wilsey? I think as much as we agree to disagree or we're kind of maybe not on the same page, I think maybe we're more on the same page than it might sound, because I think that's what they need to do. I think they need to go and find somebody who can cover those 3C minutes so that they have the flexibility to move Sharangovich back to the wing. Because your point is well taken, that if they don't have that, yeah, maybe that is the best place to put them for your lineup going forward, which is why I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're going to have some cap space to play with. I'm not saying sign somebody to a 7-year deal, but you know what? They're clearly going to try to have a transitional period before they get back to where they want to go. So go and sign a transitional number three center and allow Sharangovich to be back where I think he is best suited, and that's on the wing. So I think maybe we're on more similar pages than perhaps it might sound on the surface.
Yeah, and we're running out of time here, but just thinking ahead, okay? So let's say they try Connor's area at center. Are we going to be having the same conversation about him? Is he better on the wing than he is at center? Because he's not the biggest or strongest guy.
Could potentially absolutely be having that conversation.
And he's been fantastic playing left wing in his first season in the NHL. And sophomore seasons can be tough for a lot of players.
Yep.
So do you want to put a bunch more on Connor Zeri's plate next season? I'm not sure I would.
Yeah.
You just want to see it, though. I do want to see it, for sure. It's a very different but similar conversation that we were having about Matthew Phillips. You know, he got to free agency and you didn't know what you had there because you never got a chance to see it. Now, you know what Connor's area is at wing, and I'm on record on this show saying I think he's probably best as a winger for his career, but a kid who played center for a long time, it's well known that you're going to need centers in the 20-something range. I just think it behooves you as an organization to take a look at it.
Yeah. Fascinating. It's going to be behoove is a good word. I think we should... And you know what? Maybe, and by the way, just as we wrap up, because we'll, and this is good news, because look, I don't know if you guys are aware, but it's more difficult coming up with topics these days. So I'm cool.
We saved one.
I'm taking to save one for Tuesday. I'm all for
cut
that.
And paste, baby.
So thank you to both of you for allowing that to happen. But it doesn't have to be in free agency either. There's also the trade route that you can go down if you're looking to acquire that, you know, that person who could fit in as a potential 3C or higher. You know, who knows what they're looking, what they could get back in a trade for Jacob Markstrom or somebody else who may end up being moved between now and the start of next season. So, or between the summer and the start of next season.
You could also win the draft lottery and pick a center.
That I'd be okay with that as well.
That's a great plan, Wes. I love that plan.
Yeah, let's do that.
Last point real quick. Centerman tend to be more expensive to acquire via trade or sign in free agency than wingers. So if you've got a guy who you think can play center for you, who you've already got and got under contract, again, I don't think it's a bad path to go down, especially if you don't think you're a team that's going to be competing for the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
You've got some time to figure it out and to develop some guys and see what you've got in-house.
Fun chat, gentlemen. We got one topic to carry over to Tuesday, and we'll come up with another one for Tuesday's roundtable when the Flames take on the Ducks. Thank you, Wilsey. We'll see you at the Dome on Tuesday.
Okay, guys, enjoy the warmth.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take that as well. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, and your Daily Flames Roundtable. We're wrapping up this hour, and the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.